You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world, a city set on a hill that cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put under it a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. I believe the point Jesus is making is when we are transformed and we're changed and we're like Him and we're a part of the kingdom, our purpose now has changed also in the fact that we are to be a help to others. And so the idea of being the salt of the earth, the light of the world, is the idea of preservation, of bringing souls to God, helping souls to stay faithful, demonstrating God's love through our actions. Now, if you think about that, how well that ties in to the point behind hospitality. When we consider what hospitality is all about, it's the very thing I just said. The idea of helping others, the idea of transforming others, the idea of preserving others. And it's interesting that as we look in the New Testament, how much God has to say on this topic. And so this morning, what I'd like for us to do is to understand how the concept of hospitality fits into this idea of being the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and understanding what God expects for us to accomplish through it as we carry out this work that He's given us to do. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the hospitable God. God is not calling on us to do anything that He Himself is unwilling to do. In fact, we understand that He is a God who is kind to strangers. Now, that may sound kind of strange on first blush, the idea of the Creator knowing strangers, but we'll be back to that idea here in just a minute, and I think we'll see that right off the bat. First thing I want us to understand, though, about this is, though, that when we look at His people in days past, He expected the same kind of attitude. That as we think about the people of Israel and the commands that they were given, God gave this command also to them. Let's take a look at what He says in Leviticus 19. As He's speaking to His people, He says, "When a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." I want you to focus in this passage, particularly on this line, "You shall love him as yourself." That sounds a little familiar, doesn't it? That when Jesus is telling us what the greatest command is, He says, now the second one to it, and He quotes this. What is a stranger supposed to be to the people of Israel? A neighbor. Treat the sojourner just like he's one of your own. We would say, make him feel right at home. He is your neighbor. And what do you do to a neighbor? You love your neighbor. And He says, because you know what it's like to be a stranger. You know what it's like to be a sojourner. That's what these people were in the land of Egypt. God goes on, though. And He says, if you fail to keep this command, it is not going to go well for you. He says that if you mistreat the stranger, the sojourner among you, that's going to be something damaging to the relationship of God. We find that idea scattered throughout the Old Testament. An example of it is over in the prophet Zechariah's writing in chapter 7. Verse 10, He says, "Do not oppress the widow, the fatherless, the sojourner, or the poor. And let none of you devise evil against another in your heart." Here's God's special groups. You look in the Old Testament, He says, I better not find you picking on widows or orphans or the poor or strangers who are living amongst you. You're to care for them. You're to treat them as your neighbor. And thus, throughout the Old Testament, we see God saying, you are to be a hospitable people, a nation who's showing this graciousness to those in your midst. But let's go now to the crowning jewel of the hospitality of God. Because the greatest demonstration we're going to find of that is in the plan of salvation. So let's get back to this idea of a God who is hospitable to strangers. As the Apostle Paul wrote to the Ephesians in chapter 2, he said, "Therefore remember that at one time you Gentiles in the flesh, call the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision, which is made in the flesh by hands. Remember that at that time you were separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel," and here's our word, "and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world." Here we were, because of our sin, strangers to God. Here we were, alienated. Yet what did God do for strangers? He gave His Son. And in giving His Son, He invited us to this feast table that He set for those who will follow Him. It's interesting to me how many times that as Jesus is talking about the righteous and bringing people to righteousness, He compares it to this business of sitting down together. And in one of the leading parables where the master has sent out invitations and the first group says, "We can't come," the master says, "I'll not be undone by you. Go out," he says, "and invite the sick and the lame to come in, the outskirts of Israel, the fringes of Israel. Tell them there's a place at the table." But then he says this, "Through the servant's voice, the servant goes to the master, 'What you have commanded has been done, and still there is room.' And the master said to the servant, 'Go out to the highways and hedges, and compel people to come in, that my house may be filled.'" That's us. We're the Gentiles. We're the strangers. We're the ones out amongst the highways and the hedges. And God says, "You go out and you let them know as forcefully as you can, I want them at my table." That's the hospitality of God. And thus we find Him willing to take a bunch of strangers who do not deserve a place at His table, but to bring them in and to make them a part of His family. So as we consider the example that God has set for us, I think that helps us to understand then when we turn to the Bible and we look at these passages where God is commanding hospitality, to understand why and what that hospitality is to do. Let's talk for just a minute, though, about the word. Interesting when you look at the word that's translated into English, hospitable or hospitality. It comes from a word meaning love and a word meaning strangers. That second one we recognize, don't we? Even today, if we are somewhat fearful of foreigners, we're called xenophobic. We're scared of people not like us, scared of strangers. But yet the word hospitality says you give them this warm, familial kind of love even if you don't know them. And thus, the idea in the New Testament is that you have a joy in helping those who you don't know very well. That's the concept behind hospitality. And what we're going to find is that although the word is talking about strangers, almost every passage we look at is going to fit it into the idea of brethren in Christ. We'll see one exception to that, but we'll see that Jesus is telling us that as we are to be hospitable people, the salt of the earth, the light of the world, that in that we're serving God. So let's just briefly look at these commands that are given. The Apostle Peter gives us one very directly. He says, "Show hospitality to one another without grumbling." So here is a flat-out command of what we're to be doing. But what's interesting about this passage is the negative that's put on it. He says, "Do not grumble about what you're doing here." And so when we talk about leaving that grumbling off, he's saying instead, you're to be very ready and willing. But not only that, you're to be excited about the prospect of being able to help someone, of being able to extend this hospitality to a stranger in need. Now, let's take this passage and put it back in its context. As Peter talks about the idea of being hospitable, he says, above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each one has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. So you take all of this and you put it together, and the apostle is giving us a picture of what Christian love is all about. You love one another. You serve one another. But in the heart of that, he says you also show hospitality to one another. If there's a Christian who you don't know very well, you welcome that person into your home, not feeling like you're put out, but doing it in a joyful and excited way. The Apostle Paul has something very similar to say. He says simply, seek to show hospitality. But I want you to note this command. Here the Apostle is not simply saying, show hospitality. What he's saying is you find the opportunity for it. You're out there looking for it. It's not as though somebody calls you up and says, well, there's this Christian in town and needs a place to stay. Will you do it? It's the idea that you are aggressively looking for the opportunities to serve. Well, once again, let's put it in its context. Here he says, contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. You see the richness of the surrounding verse? That if we are a hospitable people who are aggressively seeking those opportunities to show hospitality, we're looking out for the needs of our brethren. We're trying to find the opportunity to do that very thing. The writer of Hebrews says, do not neglect, and here we've got the idea of the word kind of in the context here, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. So we're doing it without grumbling. We're aggressively seeking it out. And we are not negligent in our duty. We're not putting it off for somebody else. We're not allowing it to go undone. Let's look at the context. Let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Remember those who are in prison as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you also are in the body. Look at all of the surrounding commands. Here is the care we give for brethren. We're allowing that love to guide us. We're being hospitable. We're helping them in their mission. We're taking care of those who are in need. You think about some of the original readers. They may have very well had brethren in prison because of their beliefs. Brethren who are being persecuted. And he says, don't you forget them. You're there with them. That's a part of the body. So here, all of these commands are bringing out that idea of hospitality. But one other interesting thing we want to point out here is that when we look at the passages, they're showing us that hospitality is a sign of maturity in a spiritual sense. How do we know that? As we look at the qualifications for overseers, elders amongst us, the Apostle Paul, as he wrote to Timothy and to Titus, said, therefore, an overseer is above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable. Many times when a church is beginning the process of choosing elders, who's going to be the leaders amongst them? They begin with the family. Are kids faithful? I'm not so sure that's the right starting place. I think the starting place is to see what kind of home this man has. What has he shown about himself by a willingness to open his home up to strangers in need, to brethren who are in need? Because much of what an elder is going to do is going to center around the idea of demonstrating love by caring for others. So it's not that when a man is appointed an elder, that's when he begins to be hospitable. I think we get it backwards that way. The hospitable man is the one who is qualified. He's shown a spiritual maturity. He's shown a willingness for his home to be available to take care of those needs, whatever they may be. Another point we can tie in with this, when Paul is telling Timothy which widows could come under the church's care to have financial support from a local church. Note one of the things he says. He says, a true widow has the reputation for good works if she has brought up children, has shown hospitality. Here he says, a woman who can come under the financial care of a church, one of the things she's got to demonstrate is the fact that throughout her life, she's helped others. She's had an open home. She's been hospitable. She's taken care of their needs. Now, we put all of this together, and what we understand is that God has given us some very specific instructions. And what we must realize is that this command is not an optional command. The idea of demonstrating hospitality is not something we just kind of take or leave, and we decide, well, that's just not for me. I'm going to do everything else. But, well, if that's the case, we're showing a good deal of spiritual immaturity. That if we're saying our homes are not available for that, I'm struck by how the writer James demonstrated one who lacks faith. You ever notice what he says? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? He chooses the idea of hospitality. And he says, if you can look on the needs of someone and that doesn't move you to action, here's a brother, sister who's having problems, and I don't think it begins and ends with the idea of not having enough food or clothing, but it's the idea of a brother in need. And we look at it and just kind of flippantly say, well, I hope things go well for them. He's saying, you're beyond even immaturity. You don't have the faith that's going to be demonstrated in the works that you're called on to do. So, when we look at these passages, what it's saying is this is a command from God. But it's not some arbitrary command. It's making us like Him, the hospitable God who has hospitable children. So now let's hit the hard part of this. And this is where I point a very glaring finger at myself in so many ways. But I think one of the biggest dangers, one of the biggest things holding us back is we have this thorny ground mentality. You'll remember the thorny ground from Jesus' parable of the soils. This is the one who allows the cares of the world to overwhelm, to choke out spirituality. So I've got to look at my life and I've got to see what kind of excuses I'm giving if I'm not being hospitable. Now, I want to put an asterisk here before I move on. There are legitimate reasons. There are times when our health simply will not allow it. There are times when age gets the better of us and we simply cannot do what once we did on a very regular basis. I understand that. But we never establish the rule by the exception. Jesus has said to us, I want you to be salt and light. God has said, I want you to be hospitable. And so if I'm saying, well, if I'm just too busy for hospitality. I mean, I work full time. My kids are involved in all kinds of sports. We've got all these things that we're responsible for doing. If I'm too busy for hospitality, I'm too busy. I don't know how we can narrow it down any further than that. That if I can say I'm willing to fill up my time with all of these other things, but leave no room for a command to care for brethren in need, I'm just way too busy. If I say, well, I just don't like how my house looks, or I'm not a good cook, or my dishes don't match, then I'm way too superficial. I'm basing my relationship with needy brethren on what they think of me, on being impressive when somebody comes to my house. Hospitality doesn't always involve a meal. Hospitality never involves matching dishes. Hospitality doesn't mean you got the nicest house. What it means is you're taking your blessings that God has given you to carry out the command God has given you. If I say, well, I just need to protect my free time. I mean, I work all the time. We're always on the go. Well, I don't have a servant's mentality, if that's the case. What do I say to God In fact, this morning in our Bible study, we were looking at one of Jesus' commands where basically he says, you do the work of God and be pleased that God is accepting you as a servant. A servant says, I want to do everything I can. I want to use my time for the Lord. And if it means I give up a free day or a free afternoon or not, I'm willing to do that in the service of God. And may I tag one more thing here with a little bit of an explanation. Hospitality is much more than entertaining my friends. But I don't want to diminish that because that's really important. It's our friends who keep us going. Our spiritual friends that we just kind of hit it off with in so many ways, they're kind of an energy source for us, and we need to be spending time with them. My point is, though, when we look at those commands on hospitality, that's not really what they're centering on. That I get together with people who I really, really like and have a lot of interest, and we sit around enjoying the evening, that's great. But the hospitality that God's talking about is that which is looking to help someone in need. So, with all of that said, let's talk about how to be hospitable people. What does it mean to be purposeful in our hospitality? It simply means that I'm not looking at this arbitrarily. I'm not saying, God has given me this command, and I'm going to fulfill this command so that I fulfill the command. It's looking for the purpose behind it. What is God seeking to get me to do in showing hospitality? Well, one of the primary things is what he's saying is you're looking out for a brother in need. You're looking out for a Christian who is in need. And what he says to me is I'm going to use you. The hospitable God is using his hospitable servant to accomplish a purpose. Isn't it interesting that when we look in Matthew 25 and the Lord is talking about those on the right and left, he says, I was sick and you took care of me. I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison and you visited me. And the righteous, they say, Lord, when did we see you in all of these situations? He says, when you did it to the least of my brethren. That's when you saw me. That's hospitality. The Lord is saying in many ways, this is a marker between salvation and not salvation. The care, the comfort that you're supplying to someone is exactly what God has done for us, and therefore He desires that we do that for others. So how do we do that? In many ways, all of us are weak brethren, aren't we? I think no matter how strong we are, there are things all of us at times are going to need some help with bearing. It may be loneliness. It may be struggling with some kind of issue that's really bringing me down. It may be family problems. It may be that I've moved to a new place and I'm trying to adjust in this congregation. I'm trying to find my footing. All of those things are needs. And all of those things can be helped by hospitality, by people being hospitable, and by a willingness to accept that hospitality, of not giving ourselves an out so we can sit around pitying ourselves, but to take this advantage that God has given and use that to build up and strengthen one another. When we do that, we are the salt of the earth. Salt is a preservation. Salt is a seasoning. We do both of those things. We make each other better. But in the process, we're also working to help each other to stay true to that path of salvation. And so God is saying here, you need to do this. You need to take care of one another. But let me also suggest to us that hospitality is also a means of helping to bring people to the Lord. Yesterday, few gathered up here to pass out invitations door to door. Took various neighborhoods, went around knocking on doors. I'm a proponent of that. I think you use every opportunity you can. But are we going to find a lot of people that way? You know, what the hope is that you're going to knock on that door and the person at that particular time is in a spiritual search. And that happens. I mean, there's good stories where that's happened. But the vast majority of the time, a conversion is going to come through personal interaction. It's going to be somebody who we know and know well. Someone with whom we have some kind of personal relationship. So going just a bit past what we've been talking about in helping Christians, this one gets us out of our box a little bit. These are not Christian friends. These are not brethren from the congregation. These are people who we know in some capacity, yet are not Christians, are not faithful to God. Maybe it's people who our kids play ball with. Maybe it's our next door neighbor. Maybe it's a coworker. Lots of different situations. But yet what we're saying is I want this person to come into my home where I'm the most comfortable so that I can help develop a relationship that may very well lead someone to Christ. In this, I am the light of the world, and my home becomes that city set on a hill. Here is using God's blessings in such a way as to bring people to Him. But you put all of this together, and we return back to the passage that we started with this morning, and what it is hospitality is allowing God to be seen in me. That through my good works, God is glorified. I don't ever need to invite people into my home simply so they can ooh and ah over my stuff or cooking or whatever. That's not it. Hospitality, in the New Testament sense, is saying, I want to be God's hands here. I want to be His servant in helping others to stay faithful. I want to be God's servant in bringing people to the Lord. So then, we're left simply with, how are we going to make it happen? Don't worry, it's not going to be a second sermon, though it could be. Let me leave you just three things. Pray about it. Pray for opportunities. Pray for success. Pray for wisdom. Plan it. We are a calendar-oriented people, aren't we? You invite someone to your house, what's the first thing they're going to say typically? Well, I'll need to check my calendar. Let's put hospitality on our calendar. If I'm a busy person, I carve out the time. I'm going to do it. And after I've prayed and after I've planned, I pursue it. May I suggest to you, if you're somewhat timid about these things, partner with someone who is not. If you say, well, I'm going to invite these folks over, but I don't know what to say, I don't know how to lead a conversation, invite somebody who does that you're close to. But don't just let it die on the vine, because that's exactly what happened to the thorny ground plant. It said it began bearing fruit, but it never reached maturity. And thus, when I've prayed and I've planned and I pursue, if somebody turns me down, move on to the next person. We don't get our feelings hurt. We don't stop because, well, I've checked that off the box now. We do everything we can to be hospitable servants of the hospitable God. Because our God has said to us, I have a place reserved for you by my side. It's interesting that in our society, oftentimes that word reservation brings up food images, doesn't it? That we go into a restaurant and we say, I've got a reservation at 6, and there's our table. That's what God is saying to you and me. He's saying, I've got a place reserved for you because I'm hospitable. I care for the needs of those in need. I provide for those who will take that provision. And this morning, He makes that available to you. If you're not a Christian, God is ready to have you a place reserved in heaven with Him. If you've known that, but you've fallen from the path, God's ready to bring you back to His family, to His table. Whatever it takes this morning, let's make sure that we leave right with God.